Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is, I would describe as a top fella. I've known him a number of years. He's also the first bricklayer we've had on Blighty Talks Bricks, so a nice first for us. He's the major shareholder of SPS Brickworks. He's also very well known in the southeast in football terms, particularly at the lower league level and semi-professional level. He was a good player back in his day for many teams, but one of those was East Ham. He's also the majority shareholder of Bishop Stortford Football Club and was recently, I think until he sacked himself, the manager last season. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce my guest today, Steve Smith. Steve, how are you? Welcome to Blighty Talks Bricks.
Welcome, Steve. Yeah, mate. Good intro. It's been an interesting period, obviously with the football side and from a work front as well, the last few years.
Well, if we, just because I want to, because I'm interested, I've got my Bishop Stortford shirt on, as you've noticed.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Really. It fits, I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, it's treble XL, but my local football club, so I follow with interest. I wasn't very good at school, and I think my geography teacher once said on my school report, Stephen does well to find his way to the classroom. But geography, Bishop Stortford, I didn't look at Bishop Stortford as playing games last season in places up near the northeast. And what happened with you ending up going to places like Gateshead and Chester? I would have thought you would have been more like St Albans. And
yeah, so when we won the Ryman Prem, obviously everyone was really excited at the club. First league title for 35 years, I believe.
Was it really?
First time they'd won anything. And the club was absolutely buzzing. We was in good place. And we all believed we was going to go into the National League South. And got told we was going to go into National League
Which
South.
Which would have taken you to what kind of places?
So the furthest you go in National League South would probably be Bath, Truro. Right. But then you've got Hemel Hempstead, St Albans, Dartford.
Places you could get to within a couple of hours.
Then, obviously, the FA and the National League, bless them, decided that we was going to go to National League North, which they did to Bishop Stortford, I believe, about 15 years ago, and nearly finished the club.
Do you get any, you win the title, do you get any say it because you naturally assume you're going to go? I think everyone I've mentioned to over the course of last season.
So we appealed, and it wasn't just a one-page appeal. It was 40 pages, and someone done it for us, and we put every club in that league, the mileage from our ground to their ground, and compared it to, when you look geographically on the map, Braintree were further north than us, to be fair, which is interesting. Hemel Hempstead and St Albans. So Hemel Hempstead, I think, was 48 miles nearer, like on M1.
Well, I would. I'm not very good at geography, but I would say that Hemel would be nearer to the north than Bishop Stortford.
Anyway, I mean, I'm sure you see at the time, it made TalkSport, I was on BBC, I was on ITV, it made big headlines because to put us in the north was absolutely ludicrous. And it cost the club £500,000 last year.
Did it in expenses, travelling?
In playing budget, expenses, overnight stays. In the end, the last few games, we couldn't afford to go overnight because when you go overnight, you go to Scarborough and you're leaving at 11 o'clock Friday. We train Friday morning, leave at lunchtime.
And this is semi-pro as well, isn't it?
This is semi-pro. Get up to Scarborough, stay overnight in a hotel, then get back sort of midnight, 1 o'clock the following Sunday, early as Sunday morning, and at the pleasure of probably about £6,500, £7,000.
How many games do you play in the season in that league?
46, I think it was.
46, so it's midweek games as well.
Oh, Steve. Yeah, I mean, Southport away on a Tuesday night. I got in at 4:45 on the Wednesday morning. You know, Blyth Spartans is up on the Scottish borders, you know. So it's absolutely crazy. It's just, I've really slaughtered the FA and the National League. I'm surprised they haven't been in touch, and I fully expected to get a charge of bringing the game into disrepute. But I'm like you, I'm pretty outspoken, and I'll say what I feel. And what they did to us last year was absolutely nothing short of disgusting. It really weren't. And nothing will change my mind on that. And what made it even worse, really, for me, when we won the league, we had an awards evening at Averley Football Club. And I went to the awards evening to pick our trophies up and XYZ. And the chairman of the Isthmian League, who's also was then going on to the National League board, who I know very well, a guy called Nick Robinson, and he quoted that he was going to support us at the league meeting on the following Wednesday, and that he would vouch for us to go in the south, and how disgusting he thought it was that thought we was even contemplating going north. When we went on to the meeting on the Wednesday on the Zoom, he was the one that stuck the knife in the back and said, no, Bishop Stalford has definitely got to go in the north. So, and I haven't seen him since. So, but it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. But yeah, it just wasn't last season, really. It's drifted on to this season because obviously we've had to cut our playing budget this year.
Yep.
Because same as everything, you can't spend what you haven't got. And, as we're going to touch on in a minute with construction and businesses, we rely a lot on sponsors.
And people can't do it.
So, people are putting in vast amounts of money, really, when 15, 20 grand, which is a lot of money for anyone.
Yeah.
And this year it's going to be difficult because their businesses are not earning and they're not in a position to put 15, 20 grand into a football club. So it's made our life very, very difficult. But we'll get through it. We get through it, same as you get through everything else in life, wouldn't you? You get through it, but it's not been an ideal solution. And I think when we pulled into the car park last year on our last home game, one of the guys on the coach said, that's 9,786 miles completed.
Really?
That's how far we travelled on the road.
But just taking you back to last season, you must have had some players that had got you up, that I'm going to say, painters, decorators, IT.
Yeah, for sure. So the year we won the league, I used 24 players for the whole season. Last year in the National League, I used 76 players.
76 players. Jesus, how do you remember their names, let alone do a team talk?
But you can't get any stability, obviously, through that. And at the end of the year, when we won promotion, I lost 11 players from my squad, which it took me 4 years to build. It took me 4 years to build that
side.
And
they left because they went,
because
in the world, we can't go up north and do that.
Yeah, basically. So, and the ones that, we had, I think we had four stay out of the originals. And, but they all wanted extra money, which is fair enough. You're going to Southport on a Tuesday, you've got to have Tuesday off at work, you've got to have Wednesday off at work, and even Saturdays, towards the end, we was travelling on the day, South Shields, we left Bishop Stalford at 6:45. So I had to leave my house 5:30 on a Saturday morning and I got home at 2:15 Sunday morning. We turned up at Blythe Spartans at 1:25.
They was wondering whether you were coming, weren't they?
Yeah. And you turn up and you're playing against a team, in front of 3,500 people that are well organised, and you're getting boys get off the coach after sitting on the coach for 6.5 hours. You can't do it. You just can't.
I've watched a few of your YouTube situations that you have after you play your games. I can feel the passion and the caring. I know you're like that. What you see is you're very much like me. You've got strong opinions, but what you see is what you get. I actually felt really sorry for you, mate. I saw some of, when you'd been up north, you got beaten, and I really felt your pain when you did those interviews.
When you do anything, I'm passionate about anything. And if I played a pound up the wall with you, I'd want to beat you. So I'm a winner. I want to win. I don't do losing. But you have to take losing on the chin, obviously.
You're a West Ham fan, aren't you?
thanks for that. But but no, all joking aside, so last season was really difficult because we wasn't strong enough, really. We competed in a lot of games. We got well beaten, probably, I would say, 6 games. But in a lot of the games, we competed and we got beat 1-0, 2-1, 3-2. Close games, but we never had enough quality with us to get us over the line, really. And it was hard every Saturday, sitting on a coach, coming home 5 hours and you got beat again. And I'm one of them. When I get home, it takes me till the Monday.
Well, I remember when you lost in the playoffs the year before, and I remember speaking to you on the Monday, and I remember you being really, you saying to me, Steve, I'm hurt.
Yeah, because look, if you don't do it, if you don't do it with that passion, then don't do it, you know. And, you know, the boys have gone back pre-season this year, and we've got a new manager in. And I was saying to him on Saturday, actually, you know, what's your expectations this year? And he come out with exactly what I would have said, win the league.
Yeah.
Right? That's his expectation. Deep down, he probably knows he hasn't got the budget and the side to do that, but he believes he's going to win the league.
And what you need, isn't it?
And that's what you need. You've got to have that mentality. And, you know, as I say, it's been a real tough time because non-league football clubs, a lot of people that are involved in non-league football clubs are all volunteers.
Well, it's our future.
But a lot of people, you know, it's their life. A lot of the people at Bishop Stortford, you know, elderly people, they've been going there since they were like year dot. You know, they work on the turnstiles, they make the coffee, they do everything, sell the raffle tickets, you know, everything. Every member, the secretary, the board, all volunteers.
Yeah.
So it's really tough what's happened, but we're still here.
Well, I'll touch on the FA in a minute, but I suppose really you're a victim of your own success. You said you hadn't won a title for 35 years. When you win that, you go up. You didn't have the ruler. You didn't have the line. No. You didn't have the geography.
But it's just like, last year they put us in the north and we had to suffer it. And you take it on the chin. You can scream, shout, stamp your feet, do whatever you want. Not going to change nothing.
Did you stand down because of the journey and that, or was it it was the right time?
I'll go on to that. I think going, you know, so we had that last season, and then when they put the leagues out this year, bless them, they've decided to put us in Southern Central.
What does that mean to me then?
So that means we're Birmingham, Leicester, Coventry. We've still got, they haven't put us back in the original league what we was in.
Okay.
They've hit us again and said, no, you can go to Wales.
Is that because you've poked the bear kind of thing?
I don't know. But going back to your question there, no, the reason I've stood down really is that I've been doing it a long while. And it's not just, people just think you turn up on a Saturday and have a game of football.
It's not.
We train Tuesdays, we train Thursdays. I go and watch games. You know, I send people out to watch games. I meet people, go through players, analysis, go through teams we're playing in the weekend. So it's like a full-time job. And on a Tuesday and Thursday, it become, in the winter when it's dark, I'm getting older and driving back at night as a couple of times, and I thought, I shouldn't be doing this because I'm tired and I shouldn't be driving. And I said to my missus, I think it's time I called it a day. Everything comes to an end at some stage.
Yeah.
So I made the decision to step down. And, mate, I'm missing it like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, it's like a drug, isn't it?
Yeah.
I miss it when I don't...
Do you remember John Steele? Do you remember John Steele?
Yeah.
I was at the game on Saturday. I sat with John. And John packed up playing football when he was 28. And obviously he managed through Luton and Peterborough and professionally. And he said to me, how do you feel? And I said, pretty terrible, really. He said, it will do for a couple of years. I said, really? And he said, it's like a drug addiction, football. It's like an addiction. He said, you don't just pack up and stop. He said, it'll take you ages.
I can take it to a much smaller, you know, I'm a big Arsenal fan. I'm the summer now. I can't wait. I've missed. It's like a routine.
Yeah.
For me, it's once every other week and in the midweek when we're... You do miss it, and being involved in what you do, it doesn't surprise me.
What I miss more than anything is that, you know, the involvement with being on training on Tuesday night and Thursday night, being with the lads. I've always done it, so I've done it all my life. So it's not just something that you know I've done for a couple of years. I've always been there, and I think, you know, I'm 67 this year. It keeps you young because you're around young people, and you know, listen. When you go out on a night out, I can't do 25 anymore. but you're still around it, and it's still, you know, it's still good fun to be part of. But I'm still involved. I'm still over there, and I still go to most games.
Do you Just one of the questions. Did a lower league, do you get any help from the big local clubs? I mean, Bishop Stortford, West Ham, Tottenham. Do you get any help from those teams at all?
No, we played West Ham, not when I was at Stortford. When we was at Chelmsford a few years ago, we played West Ham. Do you remember Reece Oxford?
Yeah.
So I knew Terry Westley. He was the academy manager at West Ham at the time really well. And he brought West Ham over. And Reece Oxford played for West Ham at night. And I think we had 600 people. And Karen Brady wanted half the gate.
Half the gate for 600 people?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it worked out about 1,800 quid. Something like that. She wanted half the gate. So we played Southend Saturday. We had 600 there Saturday. And we're playing Arsenal on the 31st. Not this Wednesday, next Wednesday.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. So, Joe Poults, Porter, but it was at Chelmsford.
No.
He runs there under 21s, under 19s. So right. We played them last year, and it was really good. We had over 1,000 people there.
And please tell me we don't ask for half the money.
No, we don't. Arsenal are unbelievable. They're brilliant. Really brilliant. Great. Best club I've ever dealt with.
Really?
Yep. Well, fantastic. The guy that used to play...
I'll have to pay you for that, by the way.
No. Who's the guy that played centre-half, the German guy for him?
Mertesacker.
He oversees all the...
Yeah, he does the academy and all that.
And he comes. And, it was a really good night. And,
well, I said to you before you sat down, I had Liam Brady on a few episodes back now. And that was a bit of lunch with him after, and that was interesting talking about clubs and that. But... I mean, for me, if I was a big club, I'd be thinking, well, you can pick players up. Surely it's got to be the way to help.
Yeah, you can get... I know Wayne at Spurs and know a lot of these lads. But the problem is a lot of the academy lads that come out of the pro clubs, when they come into our level, believe it or not, they find it very difficult.
Do they? Different style of football?
Well, yeah, because they play academy. I don't call it football. I call it tippy-tap.
Yeah.
Because... they don't put the ball in the air, so it's all...
it's all on the floor, it's a different...
they come and play air level, and the first thing, someone goes up and smacks them across the nose with an elbow, and they go, what's all this about?
Yeah.
So you get a few that come through that...
But don't you need a bit of steel when you even to play at the top level? You've got to have something in you, haven't you?
You do, you get the ones that come through, so they pick who they let out, really. The ones that they want to sort of get that experience of playing at that level. So we get quite a few from... Colchester. I had two from Colchester last year. And they'll be okay. They've gone back, got a pro deal at Colchester this year, extended their contract. And I think they'll be... but I've had quite a few go through. I had Hector Capriano from Orient. He's now at Peterborough.
So basically what you're saying is...
You get a few.
Yeah,
so,
but it's that next step up, not the very top, because... as you say, tippy-tappy, different style of football.
Yeah, tippy-tappy. I had a couple of lads out of West Ham that just filtered away, really, and ended up playing really low level, you know. It's about mentality, really, as well, Steve.
Talking about mentality, this will be a few weeks before this go out, but obviously we had the Euros. What did you think of Mr. Southgate and the way that he dealt with England?
Look, everyone's slaughtering Gareth Southgate, right? Yep. Whoever takes that job, the last four competitions, quarter-final, semi-final, two finals. Big shoes to fill, right? So I was lucky. You make your own luck in football, right?
Yeah.
Big players do big things in games. Bellingham over a kick, got him out of jail, but he's a big player. The only criticism I've got of him, and I understand why he did it, I think when you manage it, when you've got a group of lads around you that you've had around you for quite a few years, you learn to trust people. And you've got people that you trust, that you like, right?
Yeah. So his assistant was one of them, then the players in the team that had got him to a number of
those. So my criticism of him, I think he tried to fit Foden and Bellingham in the same team and played them out of position.
Yeah.
Right? And I think he never had big enough, he wasn't big enough to drop Harry Kane. And yep. Harry Kane shouldn't have played after the first game because he wasn't fit.
Didn't look
or
fit,
something's
did
not right with him.
No, I agree.
Whether he's not fit or whether he's got problems, I don't know. But he was miles off it. Miles off what he should have been. So I think that's the only criticism I got of him, really, was And I'd like to ask him, why did you keep playing him?
Have you met him?
I've met him.
Nice guy?
Really nice guy. So one of the guys that comes to Stalford, a guy called Charlie Wyke, ran me last night actually, he's a top sports writer, football for The Sun.
Right.
He rang me last night to say he's coming over tomorrow night to the game. He's got back 38 days he's been away at the Euros.
Yeah.
Gareth Southgate's the best England manager he's ever met.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a statement,
gives him time,
isn't it?
Yeah. Said he always gives him time, sits down with him.
I think he was a great media person. He did what Arteta has done at Arsenal. I mean by that, he united the country behind the team.
Listen, when you're a manager of a team, right, if he'd have won that tournament, everyone said he's the best manager, he's the greatest thing that's ever happened to English football.
Yeah.
Because we got beat in the final, I'll sack him. Get rid of him. He's too negative. Yeah. Does this wrong, does that wrong. Whatever you do, you're wrong, right? And you're always going to get criticism. But overall, he can look back on his England career and say...
It's going to be a great career. And whatever he goes on to do, it will stand up as a great career.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's... I think we will sit at the telly and scream and shout, oh, we're too negative, we're too this, we're too that. But
I was one of them, by the way.
Yeah, probably. And at times I was as well. But what people don't understand, when you're playing early games against Slovakia and whoever else it was, they get 10 men behind the ball and they're well drilled and they're hard to break down. It doesn't matter who you play against, you know, you're playing against good footballers. So everyone just thinks you're going to go and win 5-6-0. It don't work like that.
So he's gone on his own accord. I assume he sat down and thought, that's what I'm going to do.
I reckon he told all the players after the game he's done.
Yeah. So who should we have now, in your view? Who should take over that? I'm available, but they haven't approached me yet. But who should we have?
I'd like to think they're going to go for an English manager. I've got to be honest.
Yeah. I find that really funny, you know, when I agree with you. But I find it funny when I hear that all the press and everyone talking. I run a business. And if I was to put a job advert out for an English-only person, I would get hung, drawn and quartered.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, bearing in mind, we've got respect on here and on our kit.
I think,
but I agree with your statement, it should be.
I don't know if you've heard today, they reckon Steven Gerrard's the lead contender for the England job.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he was at my second club up in Scotland, first club in Scotland Rangers, he did a great job up there.
I think he could get it, because I think he's the sort of person they'll go for. He's played a lot of times for England. He comes across right in the media. I think he would.
Well, I heard Lampard's name mentioned, but I didn't know Gerrard was in the mix.
Yeah. Listen, anyone.
So, English, but if it was Gerrard, that would be cool.
Yeah, I think so, didn't you?
An Eddie Howe or.
Eddie Howe, Potter, any of them. I don't think Potter would do it. I think he can handle the big personalities at Chelsea. I think he struggled there. I think that's why he lost his job at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Just didn't think he could deal with the big players there. So
just going back to Stortford, so you've got a new man in. Tell me a bit about him.
Steve? Yeah, so we advertised it and we had so many people out there. Paul Konchesky from West Ham come for it.
Oh, right,
Paul,
okay.
Yeah, really nice. Anyway, we cut it all down, but Steve lives in Stortford. Played for Orient, played for Peterborough, played for Plymouth, coached at Peterborough, managed Royston for 10 years. Just a really good football person. Come across really, really good. Early days, he's only been in the door 4 weeks. And what he's done in 4 weeks has been really encouraging.
Good.
So I really like him, get on really well with him. Which is important for me, really.
You need the manager to be getting on with the guys at the top of the tree, don't you?
But I have to go there on a Saturday and...
You don't have a tracksuit on now and you have to sit on the other side of the white line.
And everyone come up to me saying, are you missing it? Yeah, I am actually, but yeah, this is where I am.
It's transitional, isn't it? It will
take time. But listen, it's...
And I'm sure you're still going to pop down on the odd Tuesday or the odd Thursday, and I'm sure you're going to go to the games.
I'll go to the games, but just got to let him get on with it, really. And,
well, look, I wish you well on that front.
Yeah,
I have threatened numerous times to come over, and I'll come over now because we can have a beer because you won't be screaming and shouting on the touchline, will you?
Probably.
So I wish you well going forward for Bishop Stortford. I want to talk about bricks. What got you into bricklaying?
A funny story to that. So all my father's father, his father, all his brothers were all bricklayers.
Were they really?
Yeah. So all the family trend was bricklayers. The only one that didn't go into the building trade was my dad. And I remember leaving school on a Wednesday and he said, "Where are you going to work Monday?" I said, "I haven't got a job yet." He said, "We'll sort that out." And we went around loads and loads of building sites to try and get an apprenticeship in bricklaying. In carpentry, because I wanted to be a carpenter.
Is that what you wanted to be?
I wanted to be a carpenter.
Okay.
And the final job we went on, the bloke said, "I can't give him nothing in carpentry, but I'll give him a job in bricklaying." And the old man said, "Yeah, that'd do. He'd do that." Not, "Would you want to do that?" "You'll do that."
You got told, start. Did you? Could you imagine told. Doing that to kids today?
Could you
today?
Imagine doing that now?
No, not at all.
So I went into that, and then, so I was on the tools until...
What do you mean you was on? You told me you was on the tools today.
Oh, yeah, I still do. Yeah, but I was on the tools properly then. So I was 34, 35, and then I got an opportunity to go on my own. And then, then built the business up.
How many people does your business employ?
We're 62 now.
Is it really?
But in the heyday, I think we got up to about 185.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, about 185, yeah. That's why I'm grey.
At school, was you academic?
No, hated school. Absolutely hated school. Hated every minute of it.
I've got something in common with you there.
But listen, in them days, you didn't have to have a bit of paper or a qualification to get on, did you? Nowadays,
thank God.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, because nowadays, you know, you can have a degree in this and a degree in that. You might not be very good at what you do. But if you've got something to say you're good at it, you'll get a job in front of anyone else. And it's the way of the world now. So, I left school with I didn't have one qualification.
Same as me.
No. I had a strong work ethic.
Same as me.
You know. And when I built my business up and gradually got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then before you know where you are, you're sort of... on massive turnovers and...
Two things. Could you... I got asked this question probably a year ago now. Could you start your business again as you coming out as a 16-year-old? Forget what you came out and you went on to be an apprentice. Could you build up the business to what you built it up and to what it is today?
Present
now?
Day? Yeah. I think that would be very, very difficult now.
I'm the same on that one as well.
I think... the cost implications as well, the health and safety now, and what has to be, you know, all the red tape that you have to go through. It's not to say you couldn't do it, but it would be very, very difficult to do. The industry has changed beyond belief to when I started.
Yeah. For the better, in your view?
No, that's
same
definitely
as me.
Not. Definitely not. No, I very, very concerned of where we're going as an industry.
Yep.
And I'm passionate about the industry as I am about football.
I know that.
And you quoted just now about people don't listen. And I sat in a CITB meeting about 5 years ago and said, if you don't do something about it on the training side, you guys are going to have massive problems, because in 15, 20 years' time, you're not going to have anyone. You're talking about building 1.5 million houses a year, they've quoted the other day. 300,000 houses a year. The most we've ever built is 210.
Yep.
And we haven't got no labour.
No.
Because no one's any good anymore. But it's right across the board, you know. It's the colleges now. I mean, I did a 5-year apprenticeship. And when I come out, I would say, obviously I didn't know everything, but the people I worked with were all proper tradesmen.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they go on apprenticeship, they go on a 18-month training programme, and they come out as... And the people that are teaching them, they're not even tradesmen. You know, I mean...
It's
my
worrying,
lad,
isn't it?
It's terrible. But it's not just, you know, it's every trade.
Oh, no, it's across the board.
It's every trade, you know. My friend's got a big car dealership. Can't get mechanics. Can't get them.
Is this something now, we're going bricklaying, going car mechanics, do the youth of today... Is it they don't like getting their hands dirty or hard graft? I mean, we can't group everyone in that, but my view of the youngsters today is that they want everything given to them. They've got a belief that they're owed a living. And, I mean, this work-life balance, I mean, where the fuck did that come from? Pre-COVID, I'd never heard of it.
No, but unfortunately, it's what we've made them.
It's our fault, isn't it?
It's our fault, right? So
I agree with that statement as well.
It's our fault because, you know, my wife says, oh, you know, you've got to help them, you've got to do this because we didn't have that, but we can afford to give it to them, so I give it to them. But you're not teaching them nothing because they've got to go and make their own way in life that I did. I've helped them, right? I'm sure you have, right? And if they was in trouble, of course I'd help them. But I think everyone wants everything at once now, and they don't want to do the donkey work. And there's too many other ways of easier ways to earn money now, I believe. Then
I'd like to know what they are because I could do with earning a bit myself.
Yeah, I know, but you know, and in the building trade, I'll be honest. And I know you guys, because you're a lot younger than us, but I think a drug problem in this country is absolutely frightening.
I get told, I've got a friend of mine that works on site, and he says, you'll be amazed how many of people come to work.
We had a drug test on site about 6 weeks ago, and it was like being at a race course, seeing people jumping over the fences trying to get off site.
Really?
Yeah, because it's just... But a lot of these young kids now, they're selling it, and they earn more money than kind of work. And it's fact. It's fact. It's not.
No. I've got a good friend of mine who's site football, Steve, who's been around a long time, and he said, we have random drugs. He said, Blighty, you'd be amazed how many people don't take it because they know they're not going to pass it.
It's frightening. But that aside, I just think as an industry, the construction industry, he's in a really, really bad place.
When I have people on Blighty Talks Bricks, I created a magic wand. If I gave you a magic wand, it can be anything. You got three wishes. What would you do that would improve the construction industry? Because you've been around like me a long time. You're good at what you do. You've seen it all. What would you do that?
What, to improve the construction industry?
Yeah. If there's three things, what three things do you think would help?
I would get investment back into the colleges,
yeah,
right, and get people that teach it, actually qualified people that would teach it properly.
Yeah.
I would have people on site that run site managers. You wouldn't be a site manager unless you had a trade background.
Right.
That's two. What would I do the third? I think companies should be made to invest so much money per year towards training, or forced to take on so many people per year training. So we try and do about 6 apprenticeships a year if we can.
Do you lose one of the problems I get with the guys I talk to about apprenticeships, because like you, I'm very passionate about this industry, and they say the trouble is, Steve, we get a good person come along, they're really smart, they do the apprenticeship, I think it's a bit quicker these days than it was back in the day.
And then they leave.
And then they leave to start up on their own.
And why is that driven?
Is that driven by money? Is it?
People don't manage them properly.
So it's down to...
So if you manage people properly,
yeah,
and look after people in the right way, the chances are they'll stay with you. So most of the lads that have been with me, not all of them,
well, that's why I said to you,
so that's the relationship you form with people. So, and they stay with me because they know they're going to get paid every week. I'm going to look after them. You know, if something happens to them, I'll help them.
Yeah.
And they're good people. So if you have good people around you, chances are you're going to be all right. You get rubbish around you and crap around you, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And it's the same in any industry, isn't it? You've got to look after people. So, and I'm trying to say that to Ben, the son who's obviously took over. Keep preaching to him. You've got to make sure you look after these guys. The guys that are good, you've got to look after them and make sure you deal with them the right way.
He's got big shoes to fill in your case, isn't he? Because of you're so well known in the industry. Is he doing okay?
He's only 30, Steve.
That's old in some people's days. That's old these days, you know.
It is, I suppose. But he's, I made him do an apprenticeship, so I made him work on site. So he worked on site until he was 22.
Changed his surname.
but at least he's got the respect, and he can go on site, and if he needs to, he can pick a trail up, and he can say, look, I've done it. And he does that on every now and then. I say to him, just go and have a day on the trail with him, just to let him know that you know what you're talking about and you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that... But he's doing all right. He's doing all right. Obviously, this period has been really tough. In a funny way, I said to him, I'm glad it's happened, because it just makes you appreciate that it's not good all the time.
Yeah. Business is never good all the time.
It's never going to be good all the time.
I agree with that.
And we've had a lot of good years. It's really good years. And now, you know... But I said to you earlier, we're still... This is not... I know you guys are saying...
We're struggling, and you said... And do you know what? It's nice for me to hear that you're saying it's not the worst... But it's not the worst you've experienced. For me, this is the worst I've experienced.
Yeah, I think... But this, going back to what I say, I think there's such a shortage of labour, right? That if you're good at what you do...
Yeah.
And you know what you're doing...
You'll get the
You're course. Always going to earn a living, because there's so many people out there that don't know what they're doing and that are rubbish, that I think there'll always be something there for us, because... You know, the demand is there, isn't it? The demand is there. We just need the economy to change and things brought in to help the industry, and then I think we'll go again. But I think everyone gets a bit blasé with it, Steve. I think probably 2008 was the last big collapse, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a massive financial crisis.
So we probably had 14 years. Of where everyone, I would say, has done really well, would you say?
I think.
Or 12 years.
I think
if you haven't earned money in the last 12 years,
I think it's you're at the sort of the start of it, if you like. I'm at the end of it, so I think that the financial crisis 2007, 2008, that had an impact that went on a few years after that. I think 2010, 2011 was still tight in certain areas because it was about borrowing money. We couldn't get money.
So if we say from 2012...
But absolutely, a long
2012
time.
To 2022, yeah, 10 years, okay. Yeah, people that were selling your flats, they didn't really have to sell them.
Oh, listen, I mean...
Because people would come in and just...
All the mortgages.
All the takers. So they didn't really have to... Now they've got to work hard. To get a sale, they've got to work probably 50 times harder than what they did.
And that's another thing, so going back to that work ethic.
Think
about ways around it.
Yeah. I think, you know, and that's the biggest thing, I think, as well. I think, like, how many young people now have got work ethic? I mean, for me, I've always done it, and I still get up at 6 o'clock every morning.
So do I.
Yeah? It's not because my wife says, what are you getting up at 6 o'clock for? Why not?
But it's also a purpose as well.
But it's because I've always done it,
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, it's a purpose, isn't it?
You know? And I'm not ready to sit about and go garden centres and go shopping every day. I don't want to do that. I still want to have an input and be active. And
well, I've got some news for you. You can't go to garden centres, because I still want you to be involved in the industry, because you talk about experience, you talk about good people. You've got the experience, and you're an amazing individual, because I've known you a long time. We also need you to be down at Stortford, casting an eye over what's going on there. When we sat down, I said to you, time really goes quickly. It has. It's flown by. You and I have chatted many a time. I'm going to see you Thursday, because we've got a hospice charity golf day.
Yeah.
Where we'll be trying to put our hand in our pocket to, you know, give, because we've got to keep giving to charities. It's tough times. Charities are struggling big time at the moment, mate. Big time. So we'll do our best there. I said halfway through the podcast about Stortford, I mean it. I hope you really do well this year. I'd love you to actually go and win that league, and I'd love you to stick it right back up the FA, because as far as I'm concerned, they're full of... I'm not saying they're old, but I certainly don't think they're with it. But I wish Stortford well. Good luck in business. Look forward to seeing you Thursday. Mate, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, mate. Enjoyed it.
Really
thanks
enjoyed
much.
Your company.
Cheers. Thanks very much. Cheers, bro.
Viewers, listeners, I don't know where the time goes. It's flown past. I said this man's top guy. He's a top guy. Good luck to these boys over the course of the season. I hope you're all well. Stay safe. Take care. See you soon.